I'm someone who has a hard time saying no. And I think that has actually led me to where I'm today. Because, you know, if I had not said yes to a volunteer position to work on a podcast, or yes to a position to give talks at the observatory, like, I would not have realized that, you know, this is what I wanted to do with my life.
Science is awesome, it's fascinating, it sparks curiosity, and it's the reason most of us are alive today. But sometimes it sucks, from applying to funding, to spending hours in the lab, to lack of representation in many science fields. On this podcast, we talk about the ins and outs of scientific research and how it impacts our lives. Welcome to Science Sucks. Hello, and welcome to episode 22 of Science Sucks. I am over the moon to bring you this interview with astrophysicist and science communicator Dr. Parshadi Patel. Having wrapped up her PhD in astrophysics, she works at the Institute for Earth and Space Exploration at Western University. The Institute has three overarching areas: interdisciplinary research, innovation, and training. It's basically an umbrella organization that connects 61 researchers across 8 faculties and 19 departments, from engineering to law to philosophy to education and more. For example, they house the observatory, where the public can look through telescopes at the stars and planets. I freaking love telescopes! Some of you might already know my grievances with the field of science communication and how so much work is unpaid, volunteer, part-time, temporary, or other structures that make it hard to have any stability or financial security as a professional. That being said, there are folks who do full-time work in SciComm, and Parshadi is one of them. In this episode, we'll hear all about how she got to where she is today, tackle misconceptions about being an astronomer, and ponder why we are so breathtaking by the night sky. So let's make space for super science communicator, Dr. Parshadi Patel.
I'm now working at the Institute of Earth and Space Exploration here at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. However, I've taken like a very, a rugged path to what I'm doing today. I was very young when I got to visit a planetarium, and I got like intrigued by, you know, the night sky, and over the years kind of collected books, and, you know, people were nice enough to gift me things that were space related, that it kept, you know, bringing me back to wanting to learn more about space. So I ended up kind of wanting to study this field, if possible. So, you know, back home, so I'm from India originally, they didn't really have very many places where you could do your bachelor's in astronomy. So I ended up, deciding to move away from my home country and find a place where I could learn more about what I really wanted to do in the space domain. So I came to Canada, 13 years ago now. Did my bachelor's in physics and astronomy because I really wanted to kind of learn more about what are the things could you do in this area of space science and technology, and there's so much out there. So my bachelor's kind of gave me, you know, these different pockets of space that you could study in different ways, and I think I was too fascinated. I was very fascinated by it, that I decided that, you know, I should continue this journey, kind of go into a master's and a PhD. And I have, ever since the start, always wonder how, you know, simple questions like how did planets form? How did the moon form? How did the sun form? And so even though there are amazing mysteries in space, I've always kind of come back to wanting to learn about the formation of planets and formation of stars. So for my master's and my PhD, that's actually what I did. I ended up wanting to just, you know, contribute to the field of formation of planets and stars. And during that journey, I realized while volunteering for, you know, at the observatory, doing public talks, volunteering for a podcast, and then kind of going to schools, talking about space, I realized how, you know, I love doing research, but at the same time, I love talking about what I do. And so I had around 4 years of work experience when I, you know, in the field of science communication by the time I graduated with my PhD. So I decided this was kind of, you know, one I wanted to. So I still do, you know, learn about what amazing research other researchers are doing and kind of try and communicate that to diverse audience in my everyday life. So, you know, my path is pretty not straightforward, as people will call it, to be where I'm today. But yeah, that's kind of what got me into it and where I am today.
That's so interesting. I feel like with SciComm, there's never a straight path. It's always a roundabout path.
But I think it's kind of strange that it took me a while to actually figure out that this is what I want to do. It kind of took my 4 years of time to, you know, realize that, oh my God, like, you know, I love talking about this amazing things that people are doing and amazing things that have been done in the past. In regards to space and, you know, actually make that a career.
That's awesome. What kind of work did you do at the Western Observatory? What kind of shows do they have?
Yeah, so we have, it's a historical place made in, you know, basically inaugurated in 1940. So it's a pretty old telescope. And so there are lots of different programs that they offer. It's, you know, the regular public nights that we have during the summer every Saturday, once a month, every, you know, between September and April. By the same time, they had a program, which is called Explore the Stars program. In that program, they would actually let people book the observatory for a couple hours in the evenings on weekdays. And, you know, we, as in the grad students, would be the ones kind of, you know, doing an activity with the whether it's the students or public, it doesn't really matter who books it. They would come in, do an activity, learn, you know, kind of the topic they would like to learn about. And then we would go and observe the night sky. So, you know, those are the things that they have offered in the past. And now they're gearing up to offer like daytime program as well. So tons of things just at the observatory was kind of what intrigued me and kind of, you know, learning more about how people are so fascinated about space and how, you know, simple things like visiting to the observatory can actually get them more excited about learning about space.
Yeah, I think space is the one science that everyone thinks is really cool. Like, it's very broadly loved.
Yeah, I think it's just a simple thing where, you know, you look up at the night sky, you see the moon so often, you see the, you know, the stars in the night sky, and you see them kind of change over time. The constellations in the winter are different than summer. So this, you know, like, my journey started with simple questions, and I think it's the simple questions that people have, but they have fascinating answers to those. So yeah, it's one of the fields of science that I guess intrigues everyone.
Yeah. Did you know what you wanted to do before you pivoted to SciComm? Did you want to continue studying planets and star formations for longer?
Yeah. When I actually moved to Canada, my first, you know, like, everyone has a plan. I had a plan.
Yeah.
When I got into law school, my plan was to get a master's, get a PhD, find a postdoctoral position, and, you know, find a faculty position and keep doing research, you know. Yeah. That was my initial plan. And you know, I love doing research. I still do some, not in the astronomy area, but, you know, I still do research. It's just that I'm not doing it in that research area. However, when I get to work and talk to people about space, I think it kind of makes up for the fact that I don't do what I initially intended to do, and the satisfaction it gives me to just talk to people about space.
Of course, of course. It's so nice that you found something that you love.
Yeah.
So you told us a bit about your research and how you share it with the public. Are there any common misconceptions or myths that you want to debunk about your field of study?
Yeah, so I think for astronomy, there is, I mean, I come from a you know, country where it's very common for people to kind of mistake astronomy for astrology. So you would see when I talk to people, I'm very cautious about the words I use. So I always say, you know, I'm an astrophysicist, because when you say astronomer, people generally confuse you with astrology. And I've had this in the past where people, you know, start showing their hand to me or start asking me, be like, hey, my birthday is on this date. And, you know, what does my future look like? And I, you know, and then I try to explain them how, you know, I actually do the physics of things. Like I try to learn how things form and, you know, use evidence and facts to kind of come up with the formation of planets or stars, you know, kind of a theory for those kinds of things. So I think the most common misconception about astronomy in general is it's very, you know, confused very commonly with astrology. And so I tend to now use words that ensures that people don't get confused when you're talking about those two subjects. And they're completely different and they do different things. And even though it's all about stars and space, their intentions are different when you talk about each one of them. I tend to use the words differently now. I say, you know, I'm an astrophysicist instead of an astronomer, which kind of, it's the same thing. but you know, the word physics kind of puts people in a mind frame of, you know, science part of it. So I've, you know, you would note that every time I talk about it, I'll say an astrophysics or an astrophysicist.
You've learned over time that people respond differently to astrophysicists.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and like words like, you know, I would say, you know, I do planetary science or, you know, using words that they generally, you know, relate back to science is kind of what I've learned over time to just make sure that, you know, get from the get-go, they know what they're getting into, what they're coming to in terms of, you know, if they're attending a talk or anything like that.
And even astronomer, people might be like, so are you an astronaut?
Yeah, definitely. It's you know, yeah, in addition to astrologer, people, yeah, confuse you with being an astronaut, definitely.
But we need people on the ground to study space, too.
Yeah, I know. Who's going to operate all the telescopes, right?
Now that Parshadi's told us about her science journey, let's hear about her current life at the Institute for Earth and Space Exploration. What is the Institute? What's a day in the life?
The Institute is an interdisciplinary, you know, research institute where they bring in faculties and researchers from, you know, almost all over campus. They have around 61 faculty members, and they come from different departments. We have, you know, medicine involved, we have physics and astronomy, geology, geography, we have law involved, you know, education, all of these different departments and like researchers amongst them who research, you know, anything that's related to space, we bring them together because over the years, you know, people have realized that space is very interdisciplinary. You need people working from different domains together to, you know, just solve, I guess, even in simple, basic questions like, you know, are we alone in space or we want to send the next mission to human manned mission to the moon or Mars, you need people from different expertise to actually come together and work. So that's kind of what we do at the Institute.
Oh yeah, simple basic questions like, are we alone in space? Casually.
It includes research, innovation training, and educational outreach. So my portfolio involves educational outreach and communication. So I get to be that person who goes into classrooms and talks about space, develops workshops and activities for students, you know, K-12, and, you know, it's a curriculum-linked activity, so teachers can actually use them in classrooms, get to organize amazing public events in collaboration with the observatory all the time, to, you know, bring more different variety of topics in space to the public. This could be people of any ages. So, you know, I get to kind of sometimes concentrate on the younger groups, K-12, sometimes expand it to public. I also, you know, get to do special projects. So one of the projects we're currently working on is the Support for Junior Astronaut Initiative, which is spearheaded by Canadian Space Agency. So, you know, I get to work on all of these different domains when it comes to educational outreach. The other aspect of my job is also communication. So, you know, talking to the public, whether it's geared towards a specific group or whether you're talking to peers, everything requires a great set of communication. So kind of responsible for, you know, the social media aspect of communications, as well as any kind of press releases, news releases. We get to work with the communication department at Western to put those out. So, you know, it's a wide variety of portfolio. And I've recently in the past you're so also doing research. This is what, when I was talking earlier about, you know, I've shifted my focus from doing astronomy research to actually be doing education research. So, you know, that is also part of my job now at the Institute.
Cool. So the Institute is partially research, like including faculty who kind of talk about interdisciplinary problems so that there's more cross-faculty communication. And then also there's outreach, and also there's a research kind of aspect too.
Yeah, training aspect too. So we have so kind of research, training, and outreach, kind of three pillars, if you'd like to say. And that, you know, kind of encompasses whether it's students who are getting trained to do research or going to field and do research, education, and research from the perspective of faculty as well.
Awesome. That's so exciting. And you get to go out to see, you know, kids, adults, students, and talk to them about something you love, which is planetary and space science.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. I think a lot of science outreach is like part-time or on the side. So it's awesome that you get to do that as your job.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the best part of my job is when I actually get to go into classrooms and talk to students about, you know, just answer their questions about space. And they have amazing questions all the time. That's one of the coolest things about my job.
Awesome. And what kind of education research do you do? Like, what kind of questions are you asking?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear part of that question.
That's okay. I was wondering about what kind of research you do in education. Like, what kind of questions are you asking?
Yeah, so my research in the Faculty of Education kind of actually relates back to what I do in terms of outreach. So a couple of years ago, so in 2016, we actually launched a program, Space Explorers program, which we started off as just like a summer program for kids. It includes camp and academy. Over the years, we have expanded it to be, you know, multiple locations. And then we have during school year as well, PD day camps and March break camps as well. But my research actually comes from kind of understanding what these campers, when they come in for like a 5-day or 4-day camp, what do they know, you know, before they come to the camp? Then, you know, have a huge set of activities where they're working and learning a lot about space and space science, technology, engineering, all of those aspects of space. And then when they exit, how has their perspective changed? How has their perspective changed? So I do it in a couple of different ways. One of the things that we do with these camps is at the end of the camp, they're given a survey that they have to fill out. And then I look at how the activities or what the workshops and activities have had impact on these students. Another set of an activity that we do with them, but it actually helps us understand their experience at the camp is on day one, they come in and, you know, we ask them kind of on a paper, you know, draw an astronaut. What do you know what an astronaut or an astronomer does? What do you think they look like? So this is very similar to the draw a scientist test, which you may have heard of. But we really want to understand what their perspective was before they came to the camp. And then we have them do that same activity again at the end of the 4 or 5 day camp that they're attending to see if they actually absorbed all the activities and, you know, all the things that we talk about, what an astronomer or an astronaut does and what do they, you know, generally look like. So we give them examples and then come back to that question at the end of the camp to see if there was any change in their perspective. So those are my current, involvement in research is to gauge their engagement in not only just space, but also in general STEM as well.
That's awesome. It's so cool that you're evaluating the programs because a lot of programs, and at least before I knew about this kind of research, I was like, oh, you just do it. You just do the programs. But having that evaluation and feedback,
yeah, I think, and it research has about gotten, how effective it is. Because we are... Yeah, because we are so into doing, we are doing tons of these, right? So what we want to do is make sure that when we are doing it, it's actually having some kind of effect. And if it's not, then we want to go back and kind of change it so that it has some effect, because it's one point just doing it for, you know, the purpose of sake of getting it done. But the other aspect is to, you know, make sure that our idea of why we want to do these is actually coming across to these students. And, you know, they may not think it right away, but they might be, you know, gaining a lot of the skills while they're actually doing it. And it makes an impact when they go back to school in the following year, that they have learned a set of these that they did not recognize they had before. So, you know, I just got intrigued when I was doing the camp. It's like, is it having any effect or just doing it for the sake of doing it?
Yeah. You know? And of course, in my program, Learning About Science Communication, we're learning these kind of methods where they're often qualitative, like draw a picture of a scientist or what are your feelings about it? Like, tell me. And then you have to sort it into categories like kids thought it was interesting, things kids thought it was exciting, things kids thought it was boring. So we're putting them in different, like you might be analyzing qualitative data and not necessarily doing, you know, math stats on it.
Yeah, we actually, so I work with one of the faculty members in Faculty of Education. We ensure to have both of those, like, you know, did you have fun? Or, you know, what was the best thing you liked? Or what was your favorite part of the camp? You know, like getting both qualitative and quantitative data, because sometimes, you know, in the heat of the moment, you might think, okay, this was amazing. And then you kind of reflect back, what was your favorite thing? You're like, I don't know. I didn't enjoy any of that.
Kids say that all the time. I have a sister. We have a huge age difference. She's 8. And I'm like, what did you do at school today? She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, how was your day? I don't know. Like, kids always say that.
Yeah. So, you know, these kinds of questions actually help us kind of probe more in this past, I don't know, because a lot of the times that's what we get from kids most of the time. So, you know, and this helps us, not only just us, but like other people. So, you know, I make sure when I do research to publish these papers, then the rest of the people can actually use them to implement in their program. So they don't, like, not reworking the wheel that we went through for a couple of years to actually figure out what works and what doesn't work.
Of course, yeah. It's, this kind of data is very interesting because it's obviously a huge difference from your PhD research, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, a learning in a way. We used different set of tools and softwares to analyze the data from the surveys compared to what I was doing for my PhD, you know? But it's interesting because I get to keep learning.
Yeah, of course. We do a lot of this kind of stuff at Science North, which is the Science Center here in Sudbury. And we're, for example, like for the longest time, apparently museums and educational programs would be measured by how much you learn the content. Like, do kids know what dark matter is now? Do they know what a chemical bond is? But the knowledge isn't everything. So it's really cool that you're studying more holistically. Like, how do they, you know, do they have more positive attitudes towards science now?
Yeah. And I think that is especially important in the time when, you know, a lot, if you look at the general scenario or people's idea of science or on their thoughts on science, it's generally the other way around, right? It's not, sometimes not very positive. And so, you know, if simple things like this can create this positive learning environment for kids, I think that itself can actually help them, you know, just be aware of the STEM opportunities out there, or just have that curiosity. And so, you know, I'm hoping that what I'm learning with the research is something that I can pass on, and people can use that in their, you know, programs and things that they're developing for kids.
Dr. Parshini Patel is one of the founders of WOXCAN, or Women of Color in STEAM, alongside Dr. Rupali Chowdhury, Dr. Bairavi Shankar, and soon-to-be Dr. Krishana Shankar, since she's currently working on her PhD. They work to increase the visibility and elevate the careers of fellow minority women in STEAM. That's science, technology, engineering, arts, math, and medicine. Let's hear about how it all began.
So this is currently a grassroots organization that we realized that there was a need for, after, you know, 2 out of the 4 of us who co-founded actually attended a conference on women in, you know, space fields. And we realized that there wasn't much around. And then we talked about it to other people of how, you know, there aren't as many women in space, or if they are, they have a lot of barriers and, you know, there's not a lot of support, and we need to create that space for everyone. And we figured out, oh, it's not just space. It's a lot of other fields that have the similar issues. So we got together, four of us, and we're now working towards, you know, just whatever way we can help women to achieve what they want, bring them the support that they need, and you know, lift them up. We realize it's something that's required for, you know, a broad area rather than just, you know, a space or science.
Of course, yeah. And I know I'm in more and less male-dominated fields like psychology, even the science communication has a lot of women, but definitely these biases do not disappear in any field. Co-founder Krishana Sankar was on episode 16 of our podcast, so you're welcome to go back and listen to that episode for more info on WalksCan. Also, check out the link in the show notes to find out more. Next, I had to ask, what is Parshadi's favorite part of her already awesome job?
Going into classrooms and answering questions is kind of my favorite aspect of my job, because I think kids, they have surprising questions all the time. Sometimes I stumble with them as well. But that's the exciting part, is because, you know, I get to learn with them, and they get to they get their answers to their questions which they were, you know, waiting for someone to come into the classroom and answer. So that's my favorite part of the job.
Awesome. That's definitely amazing that you get to go into classrooms and talk to excited kids. And what are some challenges? Something that you're like, oh, I don't really like this part of the job.
One of the things which you know, you could probably relate, the science communication or outreach is kind of a field where, you know, we still don't have established funding sources or established kind of places where people are like, okay, we have to invest in these things to be able to do or achieve where we want to go for our next generation or the generations to come. So I think kind of the challenge in a way is to have this consistent funding every year to be doing what we are doing. So writing a lot of grants, I mean, that's challenging part of my job. I mean, doing it for last, you know, 3 years, but it's just a constant thing that you have to do every few months in order to keep up with what you want to do and what your vision of outreach looks like in next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. And science communication, science education, outreach, all of these things are slowly becoming more and more perhaps seen by mainstream academia.
Yeah. And I think definitely like 3 years compared to 3 years ago, we are seeing more and more of it. But I think it's still a constant struggle of having to keep at it every other month to ensure that there is, you know, funding. But I'm hoping that this will Hopefully, the few years down the line, we will have more recognition of why these things are needed, and you know, maybe have that support and funding that we need for all of us to do that you know, job of just getting people curious about their surroundings and just getting excited about what we are excited about all the time.
Of course, yeah. And a lot of science is taxpayer funded, so it is public, and the public should know about it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing that I always say to people is like, you know, we do science because, or we are able to conduct research or, you know, go on these trips to observe, etc., based on, you know, on the taxpayers' money. So they should know what we do and why we do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And do you have any advice for aspiring young scientists or people who want to get into your field?
Yeah, I think I would say don't give up. there's always tons of different opportunities that will come knocking your door. I'm someone who has a hard time saying no. And I think that has actually led me to where I'm today. Because, you know, if I had not said yes to a volunteer position to work on a podcast, or yes to a position to give talks at the observatory, like, I would not have realized that, you know, this is what I wanted to do with my life. So don't overburden yourself, but do take, you know, these opportunities, take them up, even though they might feel like they're, you know, outside your comfort zone. try them out, because unless you try it out, you won't know. So to everyone who's aspiring to do science, try out something that you haven't done before or are afraid to do.
That is super sound advice. There's lots of evidence to show that chasing adjacent science passions or even changing your field entirely makes you a more successful, productive scientist. And plus, like Parshati said, you might find something unexpected that you love. To wrap up the interview, let's hear where you can find Parshati on the internet.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Parshati Patel. I'm on Instagram and Facebook at spacegeek.parsh. And you can always visit my website, parshatipatel.com, if you need all of those.
And if people are in London, they can maybe even see some of the astronomy observatory events themselves.
Yeah, definitely. You can just go to our website, space.uwo.ca, and we list all our events up there. So if you're ever in London, also don't forget to send me a message. You know, we can go to the observatory together.
So yeah, I think that's it. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I had a really great time talking all about space and what we, as you know, science communicators in this domain actually do.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much, Dr. Parshati Patel, for sharing your space and SciComm expertise with us. You are out of this world. You can check all her social media and website links in the show notes. I just wanted to say, if you're listening this far, and yes, I'm looking at you, thank you. This podcast is a labor of love, and I'm grateful that you're here, listening, giving feedback, and coming on this journey with me. Thank you. To keep the conversation going, follow the podcast at Science Sucks Pod on Twitter. We're about to hit 500 Twitter followers. So follow us, tweet us, join the club, and drop us a review on iTunes so other people can find the show. So cheers to trying new things and finding one that sticks. I'm Evie, and have an amazing week.